You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're Jim and Bobby Bell, your hosts for tonight.
And if you're listening on LA Talk Radio's website, welcome. And if you're watching us on Facebook Live on their Facebook page, welcome. And if you're listening 6 months from today, welcome. whose music was that? We love that opening.
Oh, that's...
Alex Dormont.
Yeah.
And the Hot Texas Swing Band. And it's called Hot Texas. And we thank them for that music that opens and closes the show. So
I hope Alex is not listening to that.
He listens all the time. So who's our guest?
Our guest tonight is Susan Campo.
We are so delighted to have Susan with us. And here she is.
Hey, hi, everybody.
We've known Susan a long time.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
She actually did a book signing.
Like our very first book signing at when we had a store in Old Town New Hall in 2009, if we got it right, Susan.
Yeah, amazing. The book was just barely out then.
Yeah, and it was this one, right?
The hardback version.
Yes, the hardback version, of course. So this is one of the two books we're going to be talking about tonight. This is Warren Oates, A Wild Life. And then, Jim, what did you read?
We got Earthbound here about David Bowie, the making of the movie.
Earthbound.
Did I say it right?
You can say it again.
Earthbound.
I think so.
That's such a great picture. Well, both of the covers are such great photographs.
Yeah, I'm really lucky.
Yeah. So we're delighted to have you with us.
I'm so happy to be here.
To just get started, Susan, why don't you just tell our listeners and our watchers a little bit about yourself and maybe how you found yourself writing?
Well, I've written for as long as I can remember. I mean, I wrote in the high school classroom, plays for like the second grade, that kind of thing. I just always wrote. Mm-hmm. And then when I decided I wanted to try to do it for real, I think my first consideration was I wanted to study poetry and then I'd write poetry. But then I thought, oh, I'll never, ever survive doing that. So it's a hard role for a writer anyway. But to just be a poet is so I moved over into fiction and then found my way to nonfiction. So,
right. Now, did you teach also at one time?
I did. I taught at USC in their professional writing program for 10 years. And I think it was 1999 to 2009.
Okay.
And the program is not around anymore, but we had a lot of talented writers and it was really fun.
Yeah.
We read on the internet, I can't remember the gentleman's name, I tried to find it, but he owes, kind of like he owes his whole career to you and your teachings. Now, he started out writing short stories. I don't know whether he's still doing it or not.
He
might have moved on to a different genre, but he said, like, yeah, I thought his name was Michael or something.
Oh, Michael Atwood, possibly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really gratifying to that so many students have stayed in touch with me. So I know what they're doing, and you know, it's great. I think the ones that have had the biggest successes did TV and film and, wrote that rather than just writing books.
Right,
interesting, very different, something you have to love. Mm-hmm. But probably, you know, if you want to put your feet up, it's probably the better thing to do. Not worry about having to pay the bills as well.
Well, we want to talk first. We have a lot to talk about tonight, but we want to talk about this book, the Warren Oates book. Warren Oates of Wildlife. And my first question for you is, why Warren Oates? What was it about him that captivated you? This is quite a lengthy, thorough book with a lot of notes at the back and research information. So tell us how this book came to be and why you were inspired to follow his life.
Well, I just thought afterwards, I had done 3 works of fiction, and they were nicely reviewed, but they really didn't do much. And I also liked the idea of writing nonfiction and a particular biography because it got me out of myself, whereas fiction is so centered on me, pretty much, you know, or it was. So I was sitting around in London with a friend who said, well, why don't, I said, I just don't know who to write about or what to do. And he said, well, why don't you write about your favorite actor? And I thought, well, my favorite actor is Warren Oates. So just because the variety of his performances and just what he brought to everything and all the work he did and just his kind of entertaining persona. I mean, I had no idea how much fun he was till I started getting into it and how much people loved him. So it's just as basic as that. I just thought, okay, I'll do my favorite writer. I thought, well, maybe there is a book about him, but fortunately there was not. So
did you know him personally before?
I did, and I wish I did. But he passed in 82, and I probably was not really in that world at that time. It's probably still, you know, writing about music, and which is another thing I do. So probably, but, you know. I really wish I did.
Yeah. How did you start getting the information and putting it together? Who did you use for references? Or
you know, actually, research? I thought about it. USC, their cinematic arts library, is hugely helpful. It has been helpful for all of my projects. So them, and then they kind of directed me to the Margaret Herrick, which is a branch of the Academy Awards Museum, which and it's here in town on La Cienega and Olympic. And I practically live there. I mean, I've spent so much time there. So I think one time somebody asked me, one of the staff said, you know, have you been here before? And someone said, oh, she's a veteran. You know, so always there, part of the furniture.
Well, you give us so much information. And for those who maybe don't know who Warren Oates is, you want to just do kind of a little bit of, I know he was out of Kentucky. You want to give a little bit of background about him?
Yeah, he was born in a really little town in Western Kentucky called DuPuy. And I'm not sure it exists much anymore. I think it might have a couple houses in it left. Mm-hmm. And the church that he would ring the bell for, you know, go early and ring the bell for everybody to come. So that's still there. But then he was always interested in acting, and I think he did a little stint in the Marine Corps. I didn't see combat or anything like that, but then went to college at University of Louisville, got involved with their Actors Theater, and had a professor who really encouraged him. Mm-hmm. So from there, he went on to New York in the early 50s, and got into early TV, or early, you know, plays. Nothing major, but it was getting somewhere, but then realized everything was headed west. So when he moved out here to Los Angeles in the 60s, early 60s, you know, Westerns were there waiting for him. So Rifleman, everything. Mm-hmm. And from then to the movies. So
in there, one chapter, he's asked, was he ever in a military film, not a war film, but, and his answer kind of went back to Sam Peckinpah.
Oh, you're saying all Sam's films are war films?
Yeah.
I think he was in one with James Garner, Up Periscope. I don't really remember much. Yeah. Which was filmed in San Diego. So
yeah. It's a really interesting book because you give us so much. I mean, we get almost storytelling through the people that you must have interviewed, who even can remember conversations that they had, or incidences, you know, where he was driving or he was in the back seat, or, you know, he was dating someone, or, you know.
Yeah, tremendous. I mean, really, everybody had a story, and everybody put aside what they were doing to talk to me.
To talk to you.
So it was really, really, I didn't expect that. So
Was there anything through your you spent how many years did you spend the number like how long were you in warring an item, you know?
And it really was like that. I mean, I really had no other life than that. I remember going to a yoga class and not realizing the time had changed, that kind of thing, you know, daylight savings and come on stream. I just had no idea because all I was doing was the book. But it probably was 4 or 5 years. So yeah,
Okay.
it's longer than some relationships I've had.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be about right.
Were there some
But
things that you discovered that surprised you?
yeah, I didn't realize that he was very much a searcher. He was interested in Zen Buddhism. He loved going on, well, he really loved going on road trips. So lots of things that were really contemporary and fun to write about. So I didn't know that. Yeah, and that he was really deep and very serious about acting.
Now, if you were able to sit down with him today, or even after you'd finished the book, because the book is a while ago now that
Oh,
you published this, but
yeah.
if you actually had the opportunity to sit down with him, is there do you have two or three burning questions that you would really love to ask him?
Gosh, I feel like I asked everybody everything. I suppose, well, just was it what I mean, I don't think he wanted to do anything else. I would want to ask, was this the right path for him? I've had some people I think maybe acting wasn't the right path for them in the way that it kind of maybe destroyed them or whatever. With Warren, no, he lived life, he loved life, and he loved acting. So I'd be fascinated to know if he had any misgivings about doing it, but I'm pretty sure the answer would be no. So, yeah.
That's really interesting. You must have, I'm
Well,
monopolizing Susan. You
you
must have a question for her about this first part of the
I,
show.
you know, I read part of the book a number of years ago,
Okay.
and I'm working on memory here, but he seemed like the kind of guy that wasn't afraid to try something. You know, and then I thought probably there's a lot of guys out here who like to be like him if they could.
Yeah.
It's kind of, now we know he's kind of a wild guy. I don't remember all the wild things he might have done,
Well,
but
definitely a lot of time spent in bars, you know. So, but he was in a Sam Peckinpah troupe. I mean, of course, you know. And four marriages where each wife got younger, you know, things like that. These were very much of their time, you know.
Speaking of pickleball, did you know him? Did you meet him? Did you?
Peckinpah, no. Again, I met his sister and a lot of people associated with him, and it was really gratifying and wonderful. And likewise, I was very close with Warren's brother, Gordon, and we were friends. So that was, I mean, not as good as, but very useful, very gratifying and fun for me to know him. I remember one time he was showing me Fort Knox, Gordon was, and I said, "Well, can we drive any closer?" And he just gave me a look and said, "It's Fort Knox." And it was just so exactly like what Warren would say. I could just see Warren saying, "It's Fort Knox." You know? So, but yeah.
When you were working on this, when you said a moment ago about yoga and things, is you know, you were so involved in it. Were you working on other projects as well, or was this really everything?
I was teaching at SC and I was working.
Okay.
So working a like a job at a grant writing organization. So I was busy, but really Warren was my whole
Your
focus.
whole. So for writers or authors that might be listening or thinking about writing, how do you structure your day when you have a project going on?
Oh, well, I had at the time a really noisy neighbor. So I changed my schedule so I could get up at 4 in the morning, because then sort of 4 till noon, he wouldn't be up playing loud music or doing whatever it is he did. So I got so in the habit that actually sometimes I still do get up at 4 and I just start thinking about what I'm working on. So I would do that, start in right away. I for other books, when I started running, I would take a break and go for a run and come back early in the morning. But But yeah, just kind of an 8-hour day, stopping probably 4 to 1 or 2 o'clock. So, yeah, and that'd be it. You know, you'd have to do probably an interview would come through in the afternoon that you might do. And, you know, it's always a long day.
Right.
But I love it. So, you know,
when you did obviously a lot of research. So how did you know, were you already starting to write as you had research, or how did you know when I didn't, for this one,
I did all the research first and then I sat down and wrote it. Okay. Yeah. And I would never do this now. I didn't even have an outline. I just went. I had an idea of what things happened in what order, but no outline, no. And I mean, I know it has extensive notes in the back. I was unprepared for that. My poor publisher, because I turned it in without any of that. And I had to be sort of guided through doing all that. But it's good, you know.
Sure.
That kind of rigor.
Well, no, go ahead. I can tell you have something to say.
I have another a question about another book. I mean, we're talking about these two books here that we both read here this week. But I was reading on the internet about a book, Pretty Things, which is kind of a fiction book sort of set in the fashion world or retail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, music and TV, film. And I have a country singer for our lead character. And it kind of goes all over the place, that book. But it was fun to do, you know.
Well, it seems like it might be an interesting read. I mean, you know, we work a lot. We work a lot with music people. And then we've been in the
We're Susan Campo fans. So then we want to read everything.
Cast of crazy characters, as usual. Yeah. And the beauty of fiction, like I say, you don't have to get it right, you know?
Right.
You had, one other project I didn't really find anything else about. It says fanzine for the blank generation.
Oh, right.
Your early days or something.
Yeah, that actually opened a lot of doors for me. That is something I'd, you know, gone to England and got interested in the punk movement and came back and did a fanzine in 1977, just when it was starting to get hot. I actually gave it to sold it to an archive a couple of years ago. So got a nice little bit of change for something that cost 50 cents, you know?
We like that.
Yeah, me, that was great. So I never would have imagined that. So
when you mentioned a minute ago about turning this into your publisher, not having all the notes, it was, of course, this is like right on the practically the first page of the book, but you talk about this Kentucky, the author series, this was the one, right? Screen Classics.
It's such a great series.
And that was so interesting. How did you find a publisher? How did you find this publisher?
I didn't know about the Screen Classics part of Kentucky, but I just had, you know, been reading a documentary of our biography of Carol Lombard that I thought, I wonder who published this? And it said University of Indiana Press, and she was from Indiana. And I thought, well, Warren's from Kentucky. I wonder if they have one. And lo and behold, they did. So it was a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of thinking, I mean, I probably tried mainstream publishers. I probably have a fair few rejection letters knocking around for that, maybe mm-hmm. 5 or 6. But mm-hmm. I'm so glad that I found this home, and I love working with them. So
it's the travel that an author takes from idea all the way through publishing, and then keeping a book alive afterwards. It's just so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, and I'm lucky that this one seems to just keep on going. There's a couple of War Notes. Well, there's definitely one War Notes fan page that is very lively on Facebook, and that's great. And I think he has a cult following for sure.
As a writer with this much information, I think it'd be very easy to sort of, I don't want to say data dump, but what I liked about it is we went through his life kind of chronological order, but we might be in his adulthood and suddenly you take us back to when he was 9 or 10 with a story that now seems to it maybe have impacted like where he was in life at that moment. And
right.
I thought that was very interesting. I think, oh, we've already done his childhood. Oh, no, we haven't, because he's coming around the bend again.
Well, I think life can be like that. So, yeah. And like I say, sometimes if I was unsure that I would have enough material for a certain section, I might hold something back and thought, okay, well, then I can always put that here if I don't have more enough information. But pretty much with Warren, I had more than enough. I mean, the book was one third longer than what got published, which is way too long. I mean, I think it was something like 600 pages.
Yeah, it's entertaining and insightful from page one right to the end.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was so much fun to write.
And you know, when I needed to pick up this book, because something had happened to my first copy of it, so I went to bookshop.org where it is available and ordered it, and it came really fast. And so, let's Sam at LA Talk Radio. Why don't we have our little ad about bookshop.org.
Yay.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
And we're back with our guest, Susan Campo, and we're going to move into a second book that you wrote,
which
we're going to hold up again. All right. So the same question. Tell us about Earthbound, David Bowie and the Man Who Fell to Earth. And how did this all get started?
Yeah, I had wanted to do a biography of a film. And it just kind of occurred to me that I had seen The Man Who Fell to Earth as a Bowie fan many, many, many times. In fact, I know that I finagled my way into a screening, even though I wasn't really writing about movies at the time, but I was working for a local newspaper in Orange County. So I used that and was able to go to a screening and get a press kit and all that stuff, which was so exciting. But then I think I've probably seen that film probably 30 times, maybe more. Mm-hmm. I've just seen it so, so, so many times, especially after doing this. And I think I love exploring how it came from, an author's idea and went through a couple different screenplays and writers and the changes, just kind of how a project like that has a life of its own. And then, it even toward the end, there's a play sort of based on it toward Bowie's in his last years of his life. He revisited and did a play on Broadway it was on Broadway and also in London called Lazarus that was taken from, carrying on from the film. So it had a life. It still has a life. Well, gosh, this year it was a TV show. So set in, I think, the South. I didn't see it, but I heard it was really good. So, but it's not renewed.
I don't think the book did real, I mean, the book, the movie did real great necessarily here in the beginning. It's sort of categorized, I guess, these days as a cult film. I don't know whether that's really the right term for it.
Yeah, I think so, very much. Yeah, it's certainly not mainstream, but it pops up quite a bit. An issue where an editor chopped it to pieces. And there's actually, he was a guy called Donald Rugoff, who was a real larger than life guy working in New York. And there's actually a documentary about him called, that came out last year, Looking for Mr. Rugoff. And it's just so hilariously funny about, an enterprising editor. schemes to get, one of the things they did is if you went to the movie, you would get like a little bracelet that allowed you to come see it again if you didn't understand the ending. So just fun stuff like that, like the old days of, Hollywood when they were trying any sort of gimmick or anything,
Now you saw the movie several times, as you just mentioned. Now I'm assuming you read the book, but maybe you didn't.
I didn't till later. And it's well done. I mean, he's a very, very good writer, Walter Tevis, and also wrote The Queen's Gambit, The Hustler.
Well, that's true. I didn't know that. I didn't know he did The Hustler and then The Color of Money. Paul Newman got an Academy Award for that movie.
That's right.
And it's kind of interesting because the fellow had four movies made of his books. So.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good. I believe there's a biography in the works of him too, Walter Tevis. So that should be
good. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, okay. I think so.
Well, yeah. And the Queen's Gambit has just been hugely popular when it first came out anyway. I remember we watched it as almost as soon as it had come out. And now it's like,
it's such diverse, different things. You know? So, and he was an interesting man. He lived in Mexico for a while. He taught at, I think he taught at Iowa workshop for a little bit there. Yeah. And interesting man who, you know, had to battle with his addiction and happily came through it on the other side. So. Yeah.
How did you go by getting started on this? You're gonna write about the book and boy, so who you contact?
Same thing. I started probably again at USC and the Margaret Herrick. I would have gone and just looked at stuff and then maybe things online too, because I know that I think it's a university in Indiana that has a lot of Walter Tevis's papers. So I asked if they sent me, I mean, I think I had to pay for photocopies, but that's okay. Cheaper than going to Indiana. And so they sent me a bunch of things from there, from their archives, and that got me going. There were letters and drafts and all kinds of things, which is just gold dust to a biographer. So to have things like that, you know.
You seem to know some of those folks here. You had Graham Clifford, who was actually the film editor for this movie.
Yes.
And I got a feeling that you knew him before you started on the book, though.
I didn't. We just became fast friends for some reason, and I still cherish that friendship. So, yeah, I didn't know him. I don't think I knew anybody, but as you know, I knew some English people, maybe through watching soccer, maybe through writing about music. And I said, if you know one English person in Los Angeles, you know they know everybody. they can find somebody for you, you know. And one would tell another, and they would say, "Sure, have her call me," which was really, welcoming. You know.
When they were going, as I read, I studied this, as they were going to do casting for this movie, everybody figured the only person out there was David Bowie.
Yeah, come think of it, for a time, I think even Peter O'Toole was considered.
Is that right?
Looking for somebody tall. Yeah, very strange.
Exactly. That was one of the things that
Yeah, and Robert Redford. But it's impossible to imagine anyone but Bowie in that role now, I think.
I think
now that we've had remakes, you know, I think it could have a different take. So,
I think in the book, the fellow, Newton is the name of the character who's in the book, was a really tall fellow. Who comes from another planet who has been basically destroyed by nuclear battles with other planets.
Yeah, and they have no water.
And they have no water, and they're down to 300 people, and he's here to bring water back somewhere or another.
Exactly, and come to think, to carry on from that, it was filmed in New Mexico in 1975 with an almost entirely English crew, and that would not be possible today. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't do that. So it's very unusual that all these English people were in New Mexico, which they didn't, none of them knew that it had any kind of a UFO connection with Roswell and whatnot. You know? None of them knew that any of that was there.
It's really just kind
of serendipity. And it's really, really, for fans of New Mexico, it's really fun to spot the locations, including somewhere I went this summer, Fenton Lake, where Newton had the Bowie character. Newton has a house on the lake, and it's, when you get it, when you go there, it's beautiful, but it's only little, you know. So like everything else in life, it's just, it looks massive on the screen. But and I remember I'd interviewed somebody who put all the extras together. It was a great interview, and he had a moment with David Bowie where they went fishing, and you know, it's not something you would imagine David Bowie taking time out to go fishing, but you know, Rip Torn, yes, David Bowie, no, you know, but you know, so surprising little things, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. we talked the other night, the leading lady in this movie is Candy Clark. And
yeah.
She won an Academy Award for the movie American Graffiti.
She sure did. She's quite a terrific actress.
So yeah. Interesting cast in this movie. I'm sorry I didn't see it. I knew about it. I knew when it was being made, I knew about it, but I just never got to see it.
It's so fun to spot, you know, like Albuquerque's, the town set, the plaza, the funny little, you know, mm-hmm. by that with a kind of modernist building, you know, that's used a lot. It's, you know, you see things all the time. You go, I know where that is, you know. So,
well, speaking of watching movies, I actually had this question back with Warren Oates. Did you watch a lot of the films while you were working on that book?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say almost all of them. I mean, there may be one or two I just couldn't find.
Yeah.
But there used to be this great little place in North Hollywood called Eddie Brandt's Saturday Matinee, and they had everything. And sadly, now COVID has put paid to them, and I think everything's in storage somewhere. But I wish, oh my God, I wish that was every day I wish for that place, because mm-hmm. I know they'd have some stuff that I need on things I'm working on now. So it's just, it was like a little miracle place, you know. If they didn't have it, they could find it. If they didn't have it, they'd get it for you. So.
I think we've been there.
Yeah,
I think
we've been little North Hollywood by a pool.
I think yeah. I think we've been there. How fun! So here's that question, that same kind of question. So if you could sit with David Bowie, would you have any questions for him?
God,
I'm
trying not to be so starstruck. I would probably wonder if he would change anything about his performance, because mm-hmm. he was still pretty, you know, it was new to him. And mm-hmm. I think the fact that he was aloof just fit the part, you know, or not really in it, you know, kind of in it, but distant.
Yeah.
So, he seemed like he was, to a degree, a shy guy, you know. You know, when you're on stage and performing, who would ever think? But you know, in real life, we're not always as out there as we kind of portray ourselves.
Yeah, and I think probably kind of basically shy, possibly, you know, which I think maybe all of my subjects have that in common, a lot of actors. Yeah.
You know, his music seems to have changed. I don't know a lot about his music, but it seems his music has evolved and changed from when he first started performing
so
rock and roll
to
later on. And he kind of alluded to it in some way. I read some of the quotes from him. He's kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, he says, the thing is, when you get to middle age, he says, you find out that's the person that you really are when you're younger. You know?
So. Well, he was a smart cookie. Yeah.
It is kind of interesting. Then I just got to read about his first marriage and his second marriage. But you know, I you see most of the things you read out there, and they're probably basically true. But supposedly he met his first wife when they were both dating the same guy.
He was very good at getting publicity too and getting attention, so you never know.
He reminds me of Cabaret, so I just
for this book, this was published by an English company, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you find them? Or did they find you?
I think I had a friend who knew the editor that I worked with, and I just saw him when I was in England this time. I think it was a connection through a friend. So I was able to say, so-and-so recommended that I get in touch with you. That's always a great thing to be able to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody told me, blah, 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 you know?
Rather than
going in cold.
We're going to take our second little break. And when we come back, Susan, we're going to talk about what you've got working on next.
Okay.
Let's hear from Out West Shop.
Yay. Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out outwestshop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer on LA Talk Radio. And when you do shop at outwestshop.com, use coupon code radio and save $10 off a purchase of $75 or more. So we're back with our guest, our author, Susan Compo, and we can't wait to hear, what are you working on now?
Well, I am about a year into working on a biography of Sam Shepard. So I'm loving it. I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and think, what have I done? I feel really overwhelmed because if Bowie did a lot and Warren did a lot, Sam did that and more. You know, he just did so much work, so many plays, so many movies, so much TV. My saving grace is that he didn't do press junkets very much. And I think if he did, I would be just completely overwhelmed because he was a busy, busy guy. And yeah, very enigmatic, talented, private, all those things. And it's fascinating so far. And it's, again, it's for University of Kentucky Press. So I'm doing it, another book with them. And I'm very happy about that. So
have you found, now that some time has passed since like the Warren Oates book, are people as open? How is the whole research process? Are there differences between?
Oh, it's so different now. It's night and day, really. It's much, much harder to reach people. Mm-hmm. You have to jump through a whole lot more hoops. People are a lot more guarded. It could be, you know, from everything we've been through, and it also just could be changing times, you know, where you maybe think about what you're going to say because you don't want anything to come back and haunt you, or, you know, that sort of thing. It's a lot harder. Yeah. And it's not as freewheeling and open and fun. I mean, certain aspects are definitely, other than that, it's much more serious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When doing research, I'm not even sure how to phrase this question. The world has changed so much from people not writing on paper to, you know, texting or emails and not necessarily printing copies and digital photos. And how are people archiving all of that digital kind of stuff that researchers like you can have access to it?
I think with Sam, he's probably the last project chronologically that is still remnants from the old days. There's physical contracts, there's scripts. He actually wrote a lot of journals that you can look at and read in your hand, you know, hold in your hands. But other than that, when I go to archives now, if it's like, say, TV or anything more recent, anything like, you know, the log for the day, filming, there's nothing because it's all digital, you know? And likewise, texts and emails, it baffles me to know how a future biographer, if you were writing about someone who started out in 2000 or, you know, the late 90s, I don't know how you do it because it's gone. You know,
I've had that thought for a long time, even like musicians that I know. I will say to them, how are you preserving your legacy? Because even if you're never going to be on a top, you know, it's your personal history. It's your family or your local historical society or a Western or a music hall of fame who is still wanting to know all of the individuals. Years ago, Doug Green, Ranger Doug of Riders of the Sky, he wrote a phenomenal book called Singing in the Saddle. And it's like the history of Western music. And a lot of it is very small, like people who had minute careers, but there's a photograph, there's a ticket stub, there's a diary, there's a,
none of that now.
Yeah. You know? And
it's sad to me.
Yeah. So what are we going to do? How can we help people think about what they need to do?
I don't know. If you want to go and look at like the production notes for the day's filming, it won't be there. And I can't even conceive of, to get by without that. It's, you know, I don't know.
And I don't so much history.
And I don't know that people would release emails, and it's so different anyway.
Yeah.
You know, to know, I mean, we have letters from people, you know, and just things we can look at, and not now. I don't know what fascinates me.
So something to ponder over. And if you have any ideas, why don't you leave me a note on the Rendezvous with the Writer Facebook page? Because we'd love to know, what are you all thinking about?
I think about it all the time. All the time. And I feel like, whoever I write about next, it probably will still have to be someone from that era, because I don't know how you would do anything more modern.
So right.
It's fascinating.
Is Sam still with us?
No.
Sadly,
2017.
Yeah, not that long ago, but yes.
Yeah, no, not that long ago
at
all.
I remember reading that when he left us. I remember reading about it.
I dread writing, you know, the passing. That almost killed me with Warren, you know, and mm-hmm, Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well, because you live with them a long time.
You do.
You know,
you really feel it.
They're like family to you, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't even think about it yet, because I know where he, you know, in my mind, where he is, you know, and it's not nowhere near there yet, you know.
Right.
Very early days, you know.
This is a question we've begun to ask folks. What's the best investment you've made in your literary career, if there is one?
You know what the best thing that ever happened to me is? In high school, I got changed out of a class and put into a shorthand class. And I thought, what am I going to do with this stupid thing? Oh my God, I still use it, you know? Because sometimes maybe your recorder's not working, so you just start writing shorthand. So that was, I don't know if anybody would bother learning shorthand now, but it is every day I'm grateful for the fact that I had to take that crazy class that I thought I'd never use. So
yeah.
I bet you half the generation today has never heard of it.
Oh, no, they won't know. They won't know.
You know, that's a particular skill, though, being able to write shorthand. You just can't do that. That does take some learning, some training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still use it. You know, even when I write, sometimes I use it, you know, because sometimes I write by hand. If I'm stuck, I do. Yeah.
Who are some of your favorite authors? Who do you like to read in your spare time?
Well, fiction would be like Jim Harrison, Tom McGuane, Richard Ford. Nonfiction, really anything can interest me. I just read a book about illuminated manuscripts. That was interesting. Lots and lots of biographies. So it might be more the subject than the author. I'll probably read all over, you know, the spectrum. So.
Mm-hmm. And we heard you are a big soccer fan.
Yes, I am. Yes. And I did write about soccer when I was in London in the 90s, a little bit in the 2000s as well. But not so much anymore. But English soccer, yes. I mean, again, I'll be up at 4 in the morning listening to my team. So some mornings. And now the World Cup is over. But
I was going to say, we just had the championships. Did you watch any of it?
Oh, all of it. Yeah.
Did you really? Okay.
I think I maybe missed a couple games. So. In a way, I can't believe I'm saying this, but almost too much soccer this year. That's just, you know. It's been all year round, you know, with the World Cup, it coming at a weird time because not usually in the winter. And then now we're back to regular. And I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, I love it. So,
let's see. You have taught some writing classes. So do you ever experience in that old writer's block or creative pause or something where?
I do. And what I will do is read. And as long as it's something, I read all the time anyway, as long as it's well written, it'll probably inspire me and get me thinking about something for my own book. Like, oh, that's how to get over that, you know, something like that. So I don't have it bad, although I'm a little bit stuck right now, so I shouldn't say that, but just kind of getting on to the next, this book I'm doing differently. I'm not doing all the research and then writing. I'm writing it more as I go along, which is different for me. And I'm a little bit like, how do I get him running around New York City in the early 60s?
I don't know.
Plenty of wealth of information for sure, and vivid time.
Were the first two, but Warren Oates and Earthbound, yeah. Did they have lengthy editing processes, or were they pretty
well,
much
certainly
ready
Warren
to go?
Did.
Yeah,
Warren did because it was so long and involved, and because I hadn't done the notes properly. The second one, not as much. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were things. Yeah, there were things that we had to double check, and it was kind of fun with Earthbound. I worked with a guy who worked for the Santa Fe New Mexican, who was one of their film writers, and he helped me nail down all the locations in the film, and we had a lot of fun doing that.
So, oh, yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah,
yeah.
So if it's there, I could tell you if it's in, you know, Bernalillo or wherever, you know.
Well, now we have a goal because, you know, this month celebrates our fifth year here in New Mexico. And of course, with the two kind of COVID years, we've been here 5 years, but we really haven't been here in so many respects. So maybe, Jim, what we have to do is we have to go out and find all those locations.
They talked about the book. Yeah,
it's in the book, and I had someone on Amazon told me they got the book and took it to New Mexico with them so they could visit all the places.
Fun. See, that's what we need to do. Yeah. So when are you going to be coming out our way again?
Oh, I hope, within the next year, I would hope.
Okay.
Because I love to come to New Mexico, you know.
And we love to see you.
The LA area, we need to look you up and see if you're...
Sure, you're coming out this way.
Yes. So let's see, how can people find your books and how can they find you and follow you and all of that good stuff?
For me, Facebook, and that should pop up and be pretty apparently me. Instagram, it's lowercase Susan and then underscore the little line compo and there. Don't have a website. I also work for a site called rocksbackpages.com, which is just nothing but music journalism by really, very highly regarded writers. And I'm not really one of the upper echelon at all, but it's a fun site to look at. And some of this content is free. It's just all kinds of different articles about all kinds of music. So.
Okay. And then we know your titles are available at bookshop.org.
Yeah.
And you can go to, an easy way is go to outwestshop.com and click on the toolbar for books and CDs. There's a little drop down menu. First link will take you right to our affiliate page on bookshop.org. And then if you scroll down just a little way, you'll see a whole list for Rendezvous with a Writer.
Cool.
And all the books of our guests are kind of in chronological order of when they're going to be appearing. And on a book where the show has already happened, I put a podcast link right on the description of that book that you can copy and paste into your browser. So that's another way that you can access the show. So
fantastic.
Yeah. Well, this has really been fun, Susan.
Oh, we've
been
looking
forward to this. I know, because we talked about this in August, and who thought December would be here?
I know. It seems like we were just in the Range Cafe having dinner.
Just at the Range Cafe. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being with us tonight. And we hope that you have a wonderful Christmas. And I know New Year's, you're right in the world of the Rose Parade and all of that.
Yeah, I just see we have Tanya Tucker for our Grand Marshal. Or doing some music.
And you know, it's on Monday this year. Because
I know, that threw me.
Yeah, they never do the parade on a Sunday ever.
Yep.
We remember from when we lived in Pasadena. So
right around the corner.
Right around the corner. Speaking of around the corner, who is our guest next week, Jim? Who do we have?
Okay.
Yeah. I'll hold it up and you can give our Susan Chirico. Yes. Next week, Susan Chirico joins us, another author that we met in our life in California. And the name of her book is Rainbows Over Ruins. And she also is a very successful podcast host of her own show. So we'll be talking with Susan next Thursday. And do you have a writing, a parting quote tonight?
We do have a quote. Actually, it's a David Bowie quote. Now we read this. Tomorrow belongs to those who can hear it coming.
I love it.
On behalf of Susan Campo and LA Talk Radio, Sam Hassan,
and Jim and Bobby.
Jim and Bobby Bell, till we meet again next week. Remember,
it's always it's a great always day,
a great
out,
day
west.
Out west.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.